Okay, maybe we'll start again in case the first time didn't come across. The Chavur is not going to meet next week due to Tisha B'Av, so we'll discuss about both Tisha B'Av and something important to keep in mind, that right after Tisha B'Av is Shabbos Nachmu. The basis for the Chavur is the Shirim that Rabbi Ephraim Portnoy shared when he came to the shul and gave Shirim in 2009. So what we're going to be saying is based upon those shmuzin. And Chazal teaches that the two greatest Yom Tovim the Klal Yisrael has is Yom Kippur in Tu B'Av, right? So Tu B'Av is right after Tisha B'Av, so it's these are very big times. Tisha B'Av, even though it's a sad day, we know it has tremendous potential as a Yom Tov. It's not just a day of mourning. It has a potential in it to be a great day. It's brought down, Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av itself is the end of the 21-day cycle from Shavuos to B'Tammuz, and this 21 days which we find ourselves in now corresponds to 21 days between Rosh Hashanah and Hoshanah Rabbah and Simchas Torah. The last day, the 22nd day, corresponds to Simchas Torah, so very big days are coming up, both Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Av, and we need to know how to use them. So, the themes of the Chabura had been speaking about how these are days of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash, and last week we discussed how a person can connect to the Avelis and to the mourning when he feels that not everything in his life is going so well. Right? If a person really looks into himself and looks to see where he's holding, he could see that there's a part of a Chorban. So we're going to be Mosif on that as well, and speak a little about the ways of connecting to it and connecting to Shabbos Nachamu, to the comfort of Shabbos Nachamu. So, we discussed the Beis HaMikdash, right? We have to realize that there's a Beis HaMikdash inside of ourselves. We have to realize what Eretz Yisrael is, that there's a piece of Eretz Yisrael inside of us, and that all the aspects of Eretz Yisrael and Beis HaMikdash, they take place inside of each one of our own personalities. The Beis HaMikdash was that place where Emunah came into the Klal Yisrael. It was the place where Hashem forgave the Klal Yisrael with the two korbanos that were brought every single day. So, in a very simple way, we could speak about our connection to the Churban, because if a person really think about the situation, without going into deep, esoteric concepts, where I find myself in the Beis HaMikdash, where I find myself in Eretz Yisrael, a person can make a simple Cheshbon HaNefesh and say, where am I holding Ruchnius? If a person will be honest with themselves, right, then he or she will realize they're living, every single one of us is living in a Churban. So how does a person see that? We most of us like to think that we're completely good people. We're shomer Torah and mitzvos, we daven three times a day, we do what we're supposed to be doing. So where exactly is the churban in my life? Where exactly am I in gullus? So the report I said, you have to compare yourselves to the previous generations. Right? If we would just go step by step and compare ourselves to our grandparents, right? Or maybe even a little bit that we heard from our grandparents about their grandparents. Right? Everyone knows that the way the Klal Yisrael works is with Yeridos HaDoros, that every generation before us was greater than us in many ways. And even though it might seem that we're better in one particular way, when we think about it, we can realize how much better they really were. And if we go back all the generations, going back 2,000 years, just imagine what it would be like when there was a Beis HaMikdash. Portnoy didn't point this out, but the Gra brings down about the level, though, the exalted madrigas of the simple people in the times of the Beis HaMikdash were on a very exalted level. So we realize that the reason Klal Yisrael is falling and falling and falling is when we're getting further and further away from the Beis HaMikdash and from the Geula. And we have to realize ourselves what we've lost. For example, there's a whole issue whether should people go to Kollel, and there's different reasons people could give, both for the in favor of learning in Kollel and against learning in Kollel. So there was a story back in the 40s and the 50s when they first tried to establish Kollel in America. So one of the Rabbonim was trying to start a Kollel, gave to a working Jew who had just come off the boat from Hungary, and he was successful in business. The rabbi told him he wanted some help in starting a Kollel. The guy says, a kollel? I never heard of such a thing in Hungary. Well, what's a kollel? So he says, we pay Yungalite to sit and learn. He says, really? How many hours a day? 8 hours a day. He says, what do you mean? Every simple balabas learns 8 hours a day. What's your problem? This guy grew up in Hungary. Every normal working guy woke up at 3 in the morning, learned 4 hours before davening. Okay, you go to work the whole day, and then before you go to sleep, another 4 hours. That was a simple Jew. 8 hours of learning in Hungary. Who were the Rabbanim? Who were the Chashuva people? They were the ones who didn't take that break in the middle to go to work. They learned 16 hours a day. But to pay a guy to learn 8 hours a day, he didn't know what they were talking about. He didn't understand that Musag of a Kollel. I tell a story that took place during the time of the Chafetz Chaim. There was a 14-year-old Bachar that he was wanted for to be a chosin. So the story goes, he got engaged, and they found out the boy was really 16 years old. He was 2 years older than he presented himself. They wanted to call off the shidduch. Why? Well, what's the rationale for calling off a shidduch? So listen to this. A 14-year-old Bachar who knows the Shas, okay, that's something special. But a 16-year-old? Every 16-year-old knows Shas. So for that, already it was a mekach tos. They wanted to call off the thing. These are stories from not such a long time ago. 70, 80 years ago. These are stories our grandparents' parents or grandparents' grandparents, maybe, but these are pretty recent if you think about it. You know, everyone knows in Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, biggest yeshiva in Poland. So to get accepted to the yeshiva when you're like 12 or 13, you had to know 200 blat baal peh with Rashi and Tosis, just to get in this like Masivta, 8th or 9th grade. Right, 200 blat baal peh, Gefis, Gemara Rashi Tosis. Amazing. Rabbi Harlig shared with me. He's an anical, Meir Shapiro. So he told me that they used to have like shtenders next to the washing station so you could learn while you're waiting in line to wash Netilas Yadayim. Right, they made the Hasmada and the ideas that they had. Simple Jews a few generations ago, right? That's their Torah, but we also have to think about the Pashtus and Amunah that they had. We think of ourselves as such sophisticated people. Look at our grandparents, the simple Pashit Amunah that they had, the way they spoke about Hashem, and they spoke about the Torah, and many went through in the Holocaust, and how they came out with their Amunah, how strong they were, they're strong in the Yiddishkeit, whatever they had, right? We think about Tznius, right? Think about where we're holding and how they were holding. Gashmius. How much more into Gashmius are we than they are? They were simple people compared to us. So we think to ourselves, this is what they were like. Imagine when they were saying a shmooze. If they were saying a shmooze a week before Tisha B'Av, instead of 2020 was 1920, right? And in 1920, they're talking about their grandparents and their great grandparents. Who knows what they were saying? How they were comparing themselves? We look in Sfarim, right? Go through most Sfarim. They always talk about, I remember my grandparents and the generation when I was growing up. The Shlach HaKadosh, one of the classics, Rushai Horowitz, Zatzal. 400 years ago, he remembers what when he was a child, what Tisha B'Av was like, and what Tisha B'Av was like today. So we put all these things together. As you read us a gullus, we have to realize the gullus that every single one of us is in. Look around at our friends. Did you finish Shas? Right? Did you finish Shas? Look around and see, why am I in such a situation in my life that I'm so far from things that can be so simple? There's a city in Lithuania, Yakov Kamenetsky was the Rav there before he came to America. So they say that a water carrier knew Shas Baal Peh. That was like a normal thing, right? So if that's normal, so a Choshva person was like above that, right? Okay, so every single one of us nowadays, we read Hebrew, we daven from a siddur like a simple Jew. That simple Jew knew Shas. We're billions of light years away from knowing these things. And you go a step further. The person opens up a sefer, starts talking about the kedushas of Shabbos, what Shabbos is really like. The person realizes, I'm so far from that. I'm so disconnected. I mean, it's my personal gullus. You can look at tzaddikim who are living today. You see what Shabbos means to them. How electrified they become on Shabbos. How connected they feel to Shabbos. How different they feel. And look at my Shabbos. Person then realizes I'm in gullus. I don't experience the Shabbos that way. My zmiros are not like that. Person looks at himself and sees how attached he or she is to materialism. Everything he or she sees a donut, goes crazy for a donut. Why is he so connected to a donut? He cared about donuts, right? Did they think about these things? It's such a simple thing. We all think about food. We live in the world. We like steak and fries and chocolate and pizza. It's a normal thing in previous generations. Don't go back. So but they didn't care about these things. They lived such spiritual lives, right? It didn't even cross my mind. Maybe I shouldn't be connected so much to food. Maybe I should be dieting. My whole connection of not wanting food is that I need to lose weight. But I don't think about it from a spiritual place. That's really not where I'm supposed to be connecting. My connection really is supposed to be for Hashem and for spiritual things, right? You look at the Sfarim, people only wanted to think about Hashem. You read some of the letters, the correspondence between these tzaddikim. They had to eat, right? They had to have a business, they had to have a life, but they only wanted to think about Hashem. It doesn't even cross my mind when I'm eating that maybe there's something more to life than this little donut. And afterwards, I'm full. I remind myself, oh yeah, okay, maybe I eat too much. Maybe I had too many French fries, too much pizza. Person realizes there's a churban, but we should add that there's also a geula. Person thinks too much about these things. You get some feel so bad about the churban. He's so much connected to this gullus and churban, but how does a person get himself out of that? Right. The point isn't to stay in Tisha B'Av. The point is to realize that after that is a Shabbos Nachmu. Right? There's a tuba that's following that. The Chazal bring down the Malach of Yerushalayim called the Malach of Bavel. When the base of Mikdash was destroyed, it said, "You think you're so great because you burned the base of Mikdash down? You burned down a burnt building. The building was burnt already, right? You think you ground it into the ground? It was already ground. It was ground up before you came." Chazal gave a whole list. Whatever you think you did to the base of Mikdash was done before you came. It's like you're strong people, you burn down the building. The panemius, the inner aspect of the building, that was gone already. There was no holiness left in that building. It was just a shell. Chaver said a very nice word. We know Hashem has to keep the Torah, right? Hashem has to run the whole world according to halacha, whatever that means exactly. But the din is, in Gemara Megillah brings down, right? It's also to tear down a shul. You're not allowed to tear down the base of Medrash. So what was Hashem's heter to tear down the base of Migdash? So the answer is, you're allowed to tear down the base of Medrash, you're going to build a bigger one and a better one in its place. So Hashem was able to tear down the first base of Migdash because he's going to build a second one. And he was able to tear down the second one because he's going to build the third one, right? The only purpose of the destruction was because he's planning on building. Okay, so what does that mean? So there's a very nice Torah from Rabbi Nachman. It's a story. And the more we think about this story and apply this story to our lives, it could totally change the way we perceive any tzar. Rabbi Portner related this story at one of the Simply Tzvat concerts that we were privileged to host in the shul. They also told this story. So it goes like this. There was a person, he made his livelihood. He was chipping off rocks from a mountain, and he would sell the rocks in town. So one time he's chipping the rocks, and he found a diamond. So he goes to town, he shows the diamond to an appraiser, and he said, don't try selling your diamond around here because there's no one here who could really appreciate this valuable diamond. You should go to London. Go to London. There people appreciate it, and they'll pay you what it's really worth. So the guy had no money to make the trip. So he goes down to a port. He finds the captain of the ship and shows him the diamond. He says, look, when I get to London, I'm going to sell this diamond. I'll pay you back for the trip. Okay? So of course, the captain gives him a first class room. And he serves him three gourmet meals there a day. He takes really good care of him. The whole trip, the captain comes to him every day to spend a few hours with his new rich friend that he met up with. So one day after the meal, the waiter comes to clear off the table. By mistake, the man left a diamond on the table. He used to like take it out to look at it while he was eating, and he fell asleep. So the waiter comes, takes the tablecloth to clear the table, shook it off into the ocean, into the sea, together with the diamond. So the man wakes up and he realizes what happened. His diamond was thrown out overboard. So if I tell the captain what happened, I'm going to get thrown into the sea with my diamonds. I better just keep quiet. So the captain kept on coming to speak with him every day and have a good laugh with him. The man behaved as if nothing had happened. He kept himself besimcha the entire time. So the day before the ship was about to dock, the captain came to him and says, look, the truth is, this isn't a cruise trip. The truth is, I'm a pirate. And this entire ship is filled with riches. The second that I get off the ship in London, they see my passport, they're going to take everything away from me. When they see the ship belongs to me, they're going to take that all. I've already been gone. So I want to sign everything over to you. Okay? So he agrees. And as they're docking, the captain's walking off the ship. He ends up falling into the sea and he drowns. So now this guy is stuck with a document that says the entire ship with all its riches that belonged to him, that was worth thousands and thousands of times the amount of that one diamond. That's the end of this story. I remember reading this when I was in high school for the first time. It made a tremendous impression upon me. Rabbi Nachman ends off the story like this. He says, the diamond really was never his. What's the proof? What's the raya? Because in the end, by the end of the story, he didn't have it. But the ship was always his. How do you know? Because at the end of the story, that's what he was left with. And how did he get it? Because he held on. He didn't show any tsa'ar. He just kept on going through. And that's an important mussar. Something to think about. Every single one of us, what's the churban? We lost the bias rishon. We lost the bias shenis. Every single person thinks to himself, I lost what I could have accomplished in Torah. I lost where I could have been holding in tznius, and in kedusha, and in emunah, and in tefillah. Person makes a cheshbon and nefesh where he's really holding. I've lost so much. I've lost everything. I'm in gullus. So then a person has to realize, why did I lose it? You know why? Because it really wasn't mine. Why did Hashem allow it to be destroyed? Because something much, much bigger is waiting for me. How am I going to get there? Only if I hold on. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to show my pain. Of course, I have to show avelus. I have to realize something was lost. I have to be honest with myself. Hashem wants to realize it was lost for a reason. We have to realize that I caused the building to rot from the inside, so that the Romans could come and burn it down from the outside. But now that it was allowed to be burned, the reason is because Hashem's preparing that much bigger is going to happen, much better is going to happen. It's kevioch, like Hashem's amputating a sick part of the body in order to allow for such much bigger and greater to come in. So Rabbi Nosson speaks about how everything happens like that. A person makes a real cheshbon hanefesh, right? And he sees that even when he thinks that something is bad, really that's the channel for even something better to come out. Nosson says that the Navi compares Klal Yisrael to all the nations. He says, what's so great about Klal Yisrael? They do everything like everyone else, right? What makes them so special? They're taken out of Mitzrayim. Plenty of nations have histories and their stories. They fought off their oppressors. They became independent. They got their land. They developed. What's so great about Klal Yisrael? So after many psukim comparing Klal Yisrael to the lowest of nations, the pasuk says, but they still have a nakuda of epis in them. There's something to it. When a person goes deeper into serving Hashem, sometimes that's when he realizes where he's really holding. He thinks to himself, what am I doing already? Until a person pays attention to working on his midos, I have midos, I have kas, I realize I'm a terrible, horrible person. But think about it, a really horrible person doesn't say to himself, I'm a horrible person. A person thinks, I'm a mamash agoy. Until he realizes, a goy doesn't think to himself, I'm a mamash agoy, right? He thinks, I doesn't think these things. At that point, that's when you really have a connection. Punked in that place of looking into it, you connect with that, right? So sometimes Hashem allows these things to happen in order to really connect into that pintle yid. The person has to realize that he has that. He has that inside of him. The person works on himself. That Hashem will help him. You won't have to fall in order to connect and to find that pintle yid. But sometimes Hashem allows the gullus to happen for that reason. Because we're supposed to be growing. We're supposed to be finding ourselves and going deeper and deeper. So I want to share a Gemara in the end of Megillah. Recently learned this with Shmuel. Ton Rabbonim. No, I'm sorry. The Tan. Here it is. Reb Shim ben Elazar Omer. This is a Gemara where Lamed Aleph and Beis. Im Yom Lecha Zekenim Star. If the Zekenim, the elders, the old people say to you, Star, you should destroy. V'iladim Bune. Young people tell you should build. So who do you listen to? Star Blovativne. You should destroy, not build. Because the destruction that the old people, right, tell you to do is really ultimately constructive is building, right? Despite the fact that it appears to be destructive. Ubinyan Na'arim Stira. And the building of Na'arim of children. Interesting, I was thinking about it when we were learning this Gemara. It changed from Yeladim to Na'arim. I'm not sure why. I didn't have a chance really to look too much into that. But it says that the children is when their building is really a stira. The similar davar and the proof for this is Rechavim ben Shlomo, right? Because Rechavim ignored the advice of his zakenim, and he didn't humble himself, and instead he listened to his chavra, right? He was 41 years old, right? They're still called young people. As a proof, you can be over 40 and still be considered young. But what does Rabbi Nosson say from this Gemara? Right? So, you know, the simple explanation of what young people think is great, older people understand better, but you can mean it a different way, like this. On one level, I could be building. But when I come to my next level, then whatever I build up to now is nothing compared to it. I have to destroy what I first built in order to come to the next level. And even though my next level is considered building, compared to the next level, I have to go into this process, which is it's a cycle of binyan and stira, destruction and building, destruction and building. Every time, if I just hold on and realize that this is a gullus, and the reason why it's gullus is because I'm preparing for something much, much greater. I'm preparing for Shabbos Nachamu. I have to go through a Tisha B'Av to get to a Shabbos Nachamu, to get to a Tu B'Av, another Tisha B'Av, another Shabbos Nachamu, another Tisha B'Av, another Shabbos Nachamu. It goes through, and Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av. So which Tisha was he born on? Right? Every Tisha B'Av. Every Tisha B'Av, right? One of the reasons after Chatzos we sit on chairs, we put on tefillin, and halachas of Tisha become more makil, because Mashiach is born around now. When? Was he born 25 years ago? Was he born 4 years ago? No, he's born every year. The aspect of Mashiach is reborn every year because that aspect of going through a gullus again, a churban again, in order to come to a new ge'ula again, and every single one of us has his or her ge'ula. Every person has his or her gullus, his or her ge'ula. The main thing, you have to hold on. If we'll hold on, we'll see throughout the whole life, everything that he thought was really lost was never really lost. Because the proof is, at the end of the story, that's not what he had. At the end of the story, he's going to have something much greater. The proof is that it's really his, because that's what he's going to be left with. So Hashem should help us. We're holding now in the 9 days. We're coming to Shabbos Chazon. Hashem should help us that we see this entire gulf and all the tsaros that we thought we were lost, everything in Europe, that we thought we lost in Spain, in Bavel, all the tsaros that Klal Yisrael have gone through. And what we went through in the Crusades and the Inquisition, we went through the Gezeiros of Tach V'Tat, what we went through in the Holocaust. We're crying. We should be crying. We think about what we lost. Hashem should help us. Both as Klal Yisrael in general, and each one of us as an individual, we should realize that we didn't lose anything. And at the end of the story is going to come out, they're going to be left with something much, much greater, which we know truly belongs to us. Mashiach Tzidkenu b'mehera b'yameinu.